I'm doing real well. Real key game tonight between the Chiefs and the Chargers. I think that's going to be for the division winner this year and that tough AFC West.
I'll tell you what, I agree with you in that. I think that these are the two best teams in that division, and it's going to be a very, very good game tonight. I'm assuming you have Amazon Prime and you'll be able to watch. Of course, it is a little more difficult to watch the games now that they've gone to exclusive services like Amazon Prime.
You know, every time I order something on Amazon, they give me Prime. I cancel it immediately. And the only reason I do that, because I don't want to continue it. And sure. I know after 30 days, they're going to bill me for it, and I'll never use it. So I cancel it, like, within 24 hours. However, all the sports bars have it. You name a place that's got screens, and they're going to be showing that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people who are saying that the defenses are going to struggle a little bit, and it's going to be Patrick Mahomes and a Justin Herbert show. Do you agree with that premise? It's going to be a little bit more high scoring, and we're going to see both offenses shine?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though both defenses are really good,
yeah,
they are both governed to stop the run more than they are to stop the pass, and this will be 30s versus 30s easy. 38-35, 39-31,
yeah,
something like that. But it's going to be good. You know, Herbert was at the Senior Bowl a couple of years ago, and he was completely accurate at everything he threw. Usually you don't see a top 10 guy at the Senior Bowl, but he was. He was a very well-spoken, well-liked kid back then. But who knew back then that he was going to be as good as he is?
Yeah, and you look at, I mean, with a Mike McDaniel in there in Miami, we could see that resurgence from Tua that proves that he's a franchise guy. And at that point, you've got Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Tua Tagovailoa, who all turn out to be successful quarterbacks. I think that would be something that we look back on here in maybe, you know, another 5 or 10 years and think, man, we that was a really good quarterback class.
Yeah, you know, the NFL is a quarterback-driven league. You know, Americans like to see points. I love the game of soccer. I ref 7 years. I coached 10 years. I've been involved in American football, you know, ever since high school. But people don't want to see a 6-0 game. People do not want to see a 12-6 game, which is a 2-1 soccer game. Americans love a 38-35 game. We're still talking about the Chiefs and the Bills playoff game last year.
Oh, yeah, we are, and I think that's a lot of people are anticipating a potential rematch there between those two teams, whether it be in the AFC Championship game or at some point over the course of the playoffs as well. What was your takeaway from the Browns beating the Panthers and Baker Mayfield? They looked pretty good.
Yeah, they did. They actually absolutely stymied Baker Mayfield for three quarters.
Yeah.
The defense had it. But here's the thing for me. If you've got an accurate kicker and the Bengals have one and now the Browns have one, they started at their opening drive on the 35. They ended up on the Panthers 36. They went for a 4th-and-7 with a backup quarterback. I just don't understand that. You've got a guy that kicked 57 yards in preseason. He was making 60-yarders in practice like it was nothing. And yet, a 55-yarder, they thumbed their nose at it. Well, at the end of the game, the Panthers came back. The Browns were only winning by 2 points. If they had gone for the field goal, and understandable, they could have missed it, but they also could have made it, they would have had a 5-point lead with less than 2 minutes, then a 2-point lead. So naturally, the Carolina just drove and drove and drove with the whole idea to get into field goal range, which they did, which they converted. The end of the game, you know, a 58-yard field goal, nobody expects that to happen. But Cleveland dominated Baker Mayfield. They dominated the Panthers for three quarters, and then the defense either got tired. Really, they had safety problems. They had one safety that let two guys go, and that was about 90% of Carolina's effort. But the Browns have not won a opening season game for like 10, 15 years. So that was good.
Yeah, it definitely it shows up in the win column, of course, which is the most important thing. But as you mentioned, Katie Orr, I mean, this guy, The Bengals get Evan McPherson out of Florida, and then Cade York from LSU. And then you throw Justin Tucker in there as maybe the best kicker of all time, and you've got three Absolutely. Really good kickers in this division, and Boswell is not too bad either in Pittsburgh. So I mean, this might, if you're looking at kickers, obviously we don't do that too often, but this might be the best division in terms of the special teams game and the kicking game. Of course, the Bengals had some issues with the snap, and I don't know if you were able to catch the end of that one, Barry, but the importance of a long snapper, I think, was actually showcased in that game.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I know a guy that played long snapper for Florida State. He went to Pace High School. His name is Tyler McAndrew. He still lives here in Pensacola. And he was a long snapper for Florida State in those years where Florida State beat Florida in their rivalry game, and they went to Sugar Bowl and lost. Then he went to the Orange Bowl, and he was a long snapper then.
Okay.
And he was telling me, he said, on a field goal, he said, it's 9 against 11. He said, that's the first part, is you've got 11 defenders that can rush. He said, but you're having to be upside down and backwards and showing a spiral. And on a punt, you're doing it for 15 yards. And all punters are different where they want to receive the ball. Mm. One of them wants it down here low on his right thigh. One wants it right up here in his navel. And you're doing that not only the distance, but you're having to do it a spiral. So long snappers are just an unsung job. They get paid a lot of money. The Browns have had one for 8 years. He makes $1.2 million, and all he does is snap the ball about 6, 7, 8 times a game.
Yeah, the Bengals guy that they've had ever since I can remember, Clark Harris, he tore his bicep and couldn't do the spirals. They had their third-string tight end in there, and they had some snap issues and a hole that was the laces were showing to McPherson, and he hooked a 29-yard field goal that would have won it. So, I mean, there was a lot of chaos in that in that moment. So, but as far as scouting the AFC North, I mean, the Ravens win, the Steelers win, the Browns win, the Bengals lose. Obviously, it is way too early to really say this is impactful, but how big of a win do you think that is just for Jacoby Brissett's confidence going forward, knowing that it's going to be 10 more games for him to be playing in that Browns uniform, for now at least?
Yeah, well, any win for any kind of starter is good. Baker Mayfield would have loved to have a win. All these new people like Mitchell Trubisky that were starting for the first time, all of them want to remember their first game, want to win their first game, and, of course, the first game of the season sometimes sets the standard for it. But I still think that this division is going to go through Cincinnati. In fact, I think Cincinnati and the Los Angeles Chargers are going to be in the AFC Championship game. I think the Chiefs are going to be right behind them. I think Baltimore's going to be right behind them. But, you know, the Bengals shot themselves in the foot. What do they have, 5 turnovers, 6? You know, having backup long snapper, it's just, you know, you can't turn the ball over more than twice and expect to win. Never.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, I'm thinking about, while I'm watching this game, and it's like, are we learning more about the Bengals here, or are we learning a lot more about the Steelers? And I think we learn a little bit about both, in the fact that the Bengals turned the ball. Joe Burrow had 4 interceptions and a fumble, and they nearly won the game. Probably, well, they could have won the game with that field goal. And on the flip side, the Steelers had everything go their way, and they had to win, and they won in overtime. I mean, I don't know if that goes to show you anything other than the Steelers are, a lot of these games are going to be, if their defense doesn't show up, that they're going to be losing that game more likely than not, because it seems like there's a lot of limitations with that offense with a Mitch Trubisky, who the Saints are going to play at some point this year, and the Buccaneers are going to as well.
Yeah, I thought the Steelers were a bad team. I didn't like them at all. They only scored 3 points in the second half.
Yeah.
I just thought that their offense couldn't move. Once T.J. Watt went out, which, thank you for that, as a Browns fan, he's going to be gone for the year. That, you know, that is so impactful that you don't remember this, but Lawrence Taylor in the day, Dick Butkus in the day, Ray Nitschke in the day. Once these dominating defensive players go out, it's like Michael Jordan having a foot injury and goes out, and you got to rely on these other 4 guys to do something every game. a dominant defensive guy, especially a pass rusher like that, that's just in the backfield, he may not get the sack, but he may have caused somebody else to get sacked.
Yeah.
And then the amount of pressures and hurries that a guy has something like that and knockdowns, it's just staggering that you got double-digit numbers and all that.
Yeah, he was absolutely ridiculous in that game, and I in a way I can't stand him because he was taking some cheap shots, as was the whole Pittsburgh defense. But you can say a lot of people are going to be saying that, I think, if they have to play Pittsburgh. What were some of the bigger surprises in your mind, Barry, from Week One?
Well, I thought the Giants beating the Titans,
yeah,
was huge. I watched most of the second half of that game, and I just didn't think the Giants were going to have much on the offense. I thought their defense was going to be really good. But Saquon Barkley just woke up. He's completely healthy now. He got some good situations. He's a good pass receiver. For them to beat a team like the Titans, I think the Titans are going to be one of the top four or five teams in AFC. And then the Vikings spanking the Packers like they did.
Mm.
I picked the Vikings to win that division this year. I think Green Bay is going to be a close second. But the Vikings are going to be an unsung team this year, along with the Miami Dolphins, that are going to be a lot better than a lot of people think. But not only did they beat the Packers, they had a 17-0 halftime lead. They just dominated them.
Yeah.
The offense had no rhythm to it at all. I thought that the Dallas Cowboys was a big disappointment. I predicted the Buccaneers to win, but I didn't expect them to win 19-3. The Cowboys, even before Dak went out, the Cowboys had no offense.
Mm-hmm.
They've got no receivers. They've got a good tight end. Their offensive line is horrible. They used to have one of the best lines in football, and they cannot cover a pass. They just can't. It's got no defensive backfield players at all, safety or cornerbacks. Their defensive line is good, but for them to get beat 19-3, that was just a huge, huge loss to me. I think the 49ers losing to the Bears was kind of a surprise. Now the Bills 31-10 over the Rams. I picked the Bills. I picked the Bills to only lose two games this year.
Mm.
I don't know who they're going to lose them to, but I was surprised that they dominated that game. The Rams just never seemed to be in it. They had a good pass rush, but Josh Allen, that dude is the real thing.
Yeah, yeah, he's so good. And he was asked about his play style afterwards, and he's like, "Look, I've always played rough and aggressive, and in a way he plays like Andrew Luck, and I'm going to run you over." He has maybe more of the body build to do that than Andrew, but he is a total stud, and I think that the Bills are the favorite to win the Super Bowl for a reason. How I want to ask you about this too. So the news comes out that Aaron Donald and his agent, they sent retirement papers to the Rams. It never got to the league office, and obviously they were able to figure things out, but for that news to leak and then for Aaron Donald to be really absent from that entire game and the Rams to show up and not, or to not really show up in that game and get blown out. What was your reaction to that news being revealed that Aaron Donald actually sent in retirement papers? So he was going to retire, but it never got to the league office. I thought that was odd.
Yeah, I thought that was just a ploy for his contract. Now, once you send retirement papers in, you can undo them. I mean, you look at Brett Favre. Brett Favre's done it many a time.
Yep.
A lot of players have done it. Brett Favre's probably done it more than anybody, but it seems like he was ready to walk away. Now, I always think that that's a ploy, and it's no different than if you got in a relationship and then one or the other goes and packs a bag and then goes, stays with their mom or their sister or their best friend or in a motel or whatever. It's more or less to show that, look, I'm really serious about this. I'm really unhappy about this. This means a lot to me, and you're not paying attention to what I'm saying. And this is just a warning to you. However, Aaron Donald, I never thought that he was going to actually retire. Did you?
To me, I wouldn't have been totally surprised, just based on the way that he had sounded in some of the interviews. But when I was a little surprised that that news would come out that he actually sent the papers in. I thought that it would either be, hey, I'm coming back, or hey, I'm, you know, I thought it was figured out without him even sending papers in. I was surprised to see that he actually had sent the papers in, and maybe I think it was a ploy. That seems to be at least a lot of the conversation with, you know, a lot of the pundits around the NFL and all that, that he was using this strictly as a, hey, I'm going to retire unless I get paid more money, and that's what I need to be. But I thought it was interesting, too. They didn't extend it all the amount of years he's staying there. It's still a 2-year contract, but it's more money. So I wonder if he's going to, if he's going to extend beyond those 2 years, or if he's like, yeah, 2 years and I'm done.
Well, Donald and his agent were seeking an extremely rare pay raise without additional years added to the contract. That never happens. Usually you eliminate one contract and make it a 3-year deal, yeah, or a 4-year deal, depending on the money, and depends on what you can negotiate with your team. But to negotiate just for a pay raise, and basically all you're doing is you're just bumping the next 2 years on his contract, but then his contract comes up and it just depends on his production for the next 2 years. I personally don't like extensions. I think if you have a contract with somebody, you play it out, you do it out. It's no different than your contract with your employer, my contract with my employer. You just don't go to them and say, hey, if I don't get this, then I'm going to quit doing what I do for you.
Sure.
You know, of course, neither you nor I are on the playing stature of Aaron Donald, and neither one of us can sack quarterbacks like that.
No, unfortunately, we are not able to do that. Again, speaking with Barry Shuck of Dogs by Nature. Barry, do you have an idiom for us today? I know that we actually are able to go the full length of our interview, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's weird to go a full length like that. Yeah, I've got an idiom for you. Hold on just a minute. I am going to give you alley-oop.
Okay.
Now, basketball probably has more information or more famous about alley-oop, but it actually started in football.
Did it really?
Basketball has made this famous, and it's an offensive play. Of course, one player takes the ball, and he just throws it to a spot. Another player out-jumps the other players, grabs it, and then in basketball, of course, it's usually a dunk or some sort of shot. In football, it's usually done in the end zone. This originated in 1957 when the 49ers drafted a basketball standout named R.C. Owens. He was only 6'3", but he was considered a giant for a wide receiver back then, and he was known for his incredible straight-up jumping ability. The quarterback at the time was Y.A. Tittle of the 49ers, and he would throw the ball once he got inside the 15. He would just throw the ball almost straight up to a place in the end zone, and R.C. Owens would out-jump everybody and grab it for the touchdown. Now, where alley-oop actually came from is there was a play named after V.T. Hamlin's Caveman Comics. It was a comic strip character called Alley-Oop, popular in the 1930s.
I think that's absolutely fascinating because for me, I'm from Indiana. I mean, Alley-Oop is, you know, that is a basketball-only thing. I had no clue that Alley-Oop even originated with football dating back as far as it has. I think that's absolutely spectacular. And that's what I love about the idioms, Barry, is that, you know, some of the stuff I know a little bit about. I know more than others, but alley-oop, I knew absolutely nothing about an alley-oop in terms of football, but now after you explain it, it makes sense. I love our discussions, Barry. Love talking about the NFL and all the headlines that go along with it. You have a good weekend. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Anytime, my friend. See you next time.